the connection here, and we'll finish up this one and start this one. And the next time we'll do the last row. I have no white chunks.
No white chunks?
No white chunks.
Did you check those trees?
I'll use yellow. The first goal today is to make precise this connection. I mean, we probably hinted on it for a while, but you know, intuitively it's not, it will be clear. But I want to define the various things involved. Say this more. This is the first goal today. So last time we talked about the braid, like we introduced braids as we can name like subcategory, the tangle category, for example, as morphism. But this time let's just, because last time we had so many relations, it's like hard to remember them all, some 12, like 8, a large number of them. So today we want to have, for braids it's simple, the relations are fewer. So let's first start with a familiar concept of the braid group. You probably have all seen this somewhere. On N strand, this is really N. As a group, this is generated by, so BN has generators. There's sigma 1 through sigma n minus 1, right? So you can switch any two neighbors. And there, if there were n strands, you take the left strand to label your sigma, so there are only n minus 1, the last one will switch. And then with relations, thanks. Remind me to switch color, thanks. With relations, so these ones, basically, it has to do my sigma j equals sigma j sigma I if I minus j is greater than 1. That is, I guess, so is this kind of relation. So if there are two crossings far away from each other, then they can meet. And sigma I, sigma j, this is Young Baxter, the one that's correspond to Young Baxter. Plus one, sigma I, sigma I. For all appropriate time. So this one just reminds you.
Yeah, you only need
to. I need something to have the box can.
You need to go.
It's the same as putting that strand up. So we have these relations. So now let's kind of get the tensor category definition from these relations. I mean, instead of talking about restriction on the other one, I just want to give a different derivation. As a strict tensor category, just the same setup as last time. So it's a strict tensor category. So is generated by two things, just two instead of states. It's this one and this one. Also with relations, we only have two relations now instead of eight. This is one, and the next one, so I'm going to just try. So let me just keep them a couple of minutes. Okay. So we just write it in that one to give the name. So since this is called the retinoid structure, I mean, in terms of topology, if you don't look at this corresponds to the retinoid structure. And so let's compare the definitions. As a strict tensor category, somehow we have like, we need to stick in the inverse, but we can take out all the labelings. So it doesn't matter where you put it. You just tensor with this identity, like this strand pulling down. Then you'll get all your original generators. And you need to stick in the inverse because it's no longer like not like a mighty group by the definition generators. You also have its inverses, right? And also relations wise, this one just says that this is the inverse of that. So with these two together correspond to, you know, deal with the group axiom part that's missing here. And this is the same, the second version. Oh, and that one disappeared, the J sigma I sigma j, because in a tensor category you can shift things. This is one of the axiom units, right? So they are equivalent. So now we obtain this one with only two relations, and if you compare with the definition of tangle category last time, we see that only the ones, like exactly the ones without any terms, caps or cups, survived. So all the other ones are gone. Now, I'll define invariants of length. And it's like invariant of length. So more precisely, it is a strict tensor functor from the gray category, this particular category, to another strict graded tensor category. In a sense, if we don't assume straight networks, what's going to happen is that when we re-bracket, we need to be more careful. There's an operation, some morphisms in the category associated with re-bracket, like putting two strands closer to each other before you can break. But it's something you can deal with. It just simplifies things to assume everything is straight. Okay, And okay, well now I'm going to say why this is a reasonable definition. Because remember the definition of B is that it's isotopy classes, the morphisms are isotopy classes of braids. So one way to say tensor functor, I mean, it takes each of these generators of the tensor category to a generator. At the same time, making sure that if these things are isotopic here, I mean, i.e. in the same element, I mean, as the morphism is the same in this category, the image will also be the same morphism. So we will get the map from morphism to morphism to make sure that, you know, consider as maps on braids, it's invariant under isotopy classes. So invariant, I would just say it's isotopy invariant.
So the functor is a kind of tensor.
The functor is a tensor functor because you want the composition and the grouping next to each other to be preserved. So the value of such an invariant will be it takes value in the morphism in the new category. Right. So let me just.
C is also a braided category.
Yeah, it's a braided category. Otherwise, you don't know where the braid angle is. So now, I'm going to define, I haven't defined that straight path. I need to define this object, so straight graded tensor functor. So it doesn't just respect stacking, it also respects grading. And I will make it more precise here. Okay. So it's still only labeled by three things. Like, I mean, data-wise, it has this map. This is just a function that takes morphism to morphism and takes object to object. And this one is the thing that tells you where the identity thing in the first category maps to. I mean, or the map between. And this one is the one that kind of groups tensor products together. So maybe you remember from before we did this before. So I won't go into the details. So this is just that. So CD needs to be braided for this to be braided tensor function. To be a braided tensor function, CD needs to be braided. Braided tensor. I mean, this is just a tensor function. Can I just say here? This is a tensor function like we defined before. Except it has this additional structure. I mean, it preserves grading, which is a function. So this thing is a tensor function. And now, such that for any pair v prime object as an object which is objects in C. So just two things in C. This is this diagram. It's also a little quick reminder on what phi 2 is. So phi 2 does usually is like natural isomorphism, which takes any pair into this thing. And then now you have this braiding in the category C, I mean D. And there's this braiding in the category C, but with the functor applied to it. And this thing forms a commutative diagram in T. So let me switch this component. So I call this respect grading. And now strict just means that if here I have a strict graded tensor function, it just means that this as a tensor function is strict, which means that these are identities. So exactly the grading, like function applied to grading is the same as the grading in the human pattern. So I call that say grading. The grading is preserved by F, so which means like we don't need to compose with anything.
Maybe I missed the some of the reference. Why? What are the phi as in phi as in the definition of the functor?
Because the key idea is that if you have a tensor category, not just the category, it comes with a tensor product and also identity. So you need to say how, if it's a tensor functor, you want to respect those things, respect the tensor product and respect the identity. And it's just formulated as, so there exists one morphism. Wait.
So a gradient tensor functor is a tuple. It's a triple, where is the you have the usual definition functor the F, and you have another two phis.
Which,
the same. The phis are what?
They specify how it respects the identity. So let's put this aside. So phi naught is the morphism in this category. Such that, physically, morphism is an isomorphism actually. I think from I of, I hope I'm getting this right. So F of I, this is the identity in C, to the identity in D.
Shouldn't this just be included in the definition of F?
No, because F is the functor itself. So a priori in a category, you don't have these objects, so there's nothing special about them. And you don't have, like phi 2, you see here, phi 2 goes between tensor product of F and V prime for this, right? Mm-hmm. And it's for any pair V, V prime, okay? It's a family of isomorphisms. It's like one of the Nash. I think it was one of the natural
ones. So both phi naught and phi 2 are morphisms in D.
Yes. So, right. So how you cannot even define, so you cannot say how it respects tensor product if it doesn't have tensor product. So F is itself is a functor. But you give additional requirements to it for it to be a tensor functor. So what you could have is a functor between tensor categories, which will not preserve, these things.
But phi naught and phi 2 are already included in D, part of D.
No, they're not. They take a particular morphism from D. So it's just like when we define a graded biogebra, we single out the special element R inside A tensor A. But you can say, oh, the R is already inside A tensor A, but it's not, you need to single out this special element. It's just like now, you need to single out this special morphism.
So you mean, before we define the functor, suppose we just have a tensor, braided tensor category D, and in that D, we don't have to have a morphism, the morphism is phi naught and phi 2.
Well, they are.
Are they already in D or?
No, the thing is, this is data associated with the functor, and not.
But you said they're morphisms in D.
They are morphisms in D. That's a requirement. For this to be a tensor functor, these two things need to come, like this needs to be a natural isomorphism. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know, maybe I'm dumb, but if they're already in D, why you have to include them in
because you need to select a special one. There can be, there might be many that have this property, but you need to choose one in particular.
So you just choose.
But you can also, what may happen also, you just have F, right? What if you just have F? And this is just a functor. You can still have, you still have a notional functor between tensor categories. It's just not as nice. I mean, it's not very useful for the study of tensor category to consider just functor without the preserving, without the F satisfying these things. Look, F's come in here and here, right? So it's not just that it has this map, but this map relates these two things. So make sure that...
But there are other maps can do the same thing, right?
No, there are two problems. There could be other maps which does the same thing, and there could be no maps that does that. There are lots of morphisms in here, but maybe F is so bad
Is it possible that the braided tensor category has no such such morphisms in that category?
Yeah.
Okay, and for that kind of category, can you still define a braided tensor functor from another? No.
You have to first be a tensor functor, and if
there.
You can define a tensor functor, except it won't be a braided tensor functor.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, braided tensor function. So suppose you have two braided tensor categories C and D.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Suppose in D there are no such maps phi naught and phi two. No such morphisms in D or in D.
Right.
And in that case, you cannot define a braided tensor functor from C to D, right?
Well, that's not true. You cannot define a braided tensor functor with the underlying tensor functor being F. And you can also, not even that, furthermore, you cannot even define a tensor functor with the underlying functor being F. So you have this underlying functor, which means that you assign an object in C, an object in D, and any morphism here, and morphism here. But with that structure, you know, the underlying functor being that, you cannot, there's no possible way to come out with phi 0 and phi 2, which turns it into a tensor functor. Therefore, you cannot construct the braided tensor function based on F. But you could potentially have a different, totally different function between the two categories. And if those two categories are braided, there probably will exist some other tensor function. And this won't be F, with some G or something. Well, okay. Maybe it's that there too. Anyway, that's the problem. So that's the definition. And therefore, we finish the definition of invariant of braid. So now let's illustrate how braid category gives rise to invariant of braid. And here, so let's give the name C. Gives invariant of braid basically, so you can pick an object. And I'll describe how. I could write down a theorem which involves equivalence categories, but I don't want to do that. Just let me give you an intuitive idea of how to do this. And we've probably did a lot of memory. It's not hard to read. So you pick a particular.
Shouldn't you?
And so, like, you have first the category structure, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So for the category structure, the morphisms that you need is F. So you get a functor that maps to the category structure from one to the category structure to the other one. But now you have a braided tensor category.
Yes.
So you have more structure.
Right.
One of the structures is the brackets. Mm-hmm. So you need another thing that maps to between the two different brackets, and the first one and the next one. That's phi 2. And the other structure is the identity functor, and you need phi 0.
But those phi's are already in D. Those phi's already morphisms.
Should we talk about it after? Let's talk after. Let's continue first. Sorry. So here, braided category, you see by picking an object, getting a random braid. So we do this by, so now we know what a is that we want, so this side now we know it's the same as straight graded structure. From B to C. Then now I just have to say, oh, how do I rewrite so graded, straight graded? You know, for the definite straight graded function, you want the grading to go to the grading, right? So I explain when if this phi 2 is just identity, then this is a straight thing. So phi 2 will be identity, and you just want to take F to take the grading of C to grading of B. So what's the grading of C? So in this case, the grading of B to grading of C. So what's the grading of B? Grading of B is physically your elements like that. And grading of C in our graphic representation is like this one, this particular element. I mean, maybe it's topological. I'm using suggestive symbols, but don't confuse them. Like, just think of them. Maybe I haven't. Let me see something.
Shouldn't the generators be the same?
Yeah, they are. No, not the same. I mean, they're not the same thing. Let me first pick an element. Okay. Let me first. So I said pick special V in objects. You can pick anyone because this one is a graded thing. So all objects are nice enough. Well, satisfied. So now we take in the graded category we have this generator that we just talked about. If that particular put map this particular generator to okay. And that is in a graded category, you know what this means. So this is a particular isomorphism of C. So this is a morphism in B, right? So I map morphism to morphism. This is strict. Anyway, so maybe it's okay. But let's try to extend this definition to a strict graded tensor function to the whole thing. I mean, here I'm only talking about on the generator. But basically, this will give you the definition. So I define a functor, define f functor. Functor f from B to C by this. And I should want, find straight graded functor in the whatever prefix you like to add here. Functor, and this does preserve grading. You see, this is the grading in this category. It's a grading in this category because it satisfies the young Baxter equation. But I think you can check that it hexagon. You need to satisfy hexagon 1 and hexagon 2, which is related to this. And then this is the grading. So it maps grading to grading, so it's a graded functor, if you can extend it. So extending it just basically means, like, if you have a break here, I mean, between these two things, they have a break, whatever it is, for example, you kind of cut them up this way and that way, right? That's what means to be generators. So you can cut them up into pieces involving only generators or identity. Then you map each of them, you map this thing to like basically put it back together. So F, you map it to F, or, you know, that piece. You apply F to each piece, right? F of identity is again identity. You apply F to each piece. That's how you extend to a tensor function. So you just you break it down into pieces involving only generators, and then you apply F to each of them, being a tensor function. I mean, extending by tensor function means that these have to agree with the F of the whole thing, the original break. So hover, you like to think about it. That's how you extend a gradient, a tensor function. And because this maps gradient to gradient, it's a graded tensor function. And strictness just comes actually all in writing. I may have talked about like this graphic local representation in category. They are kind of assuming straightness most of the time, in the sense that when I draw this, you know, I don't explain there is a street bracketing going on here. So, wait, do you have questions about this? Do computers have questions, or is it okay?
No, it's okay.
It's okay? Well, if you have questions, then we can ask. So that's how you gain memory. Actually, so something a little stronger is true. I mean, converse is true. So if given a graded functor from A to C, I mean, picking a graded functor is the same as choosing an object. So that's the theory. I mean, but we don't need that part. I mean, just we'll care less about that part, and we can prove in terms of tensor equivalence. So anyway. Let's move on to the next thing. Next goal.
So, for example, we know John's polynomials are invariants of rays.
It's one, yeah.
Yeah. How do you translate that into this definition of functor?
Yeah, you can. So, in that particular case, so I don't know what category it is. So you have to pick the right category, graded category, and then you pick an object. So I think at least so there's something called Homfield polynomial, you know, like similar nature as Jones with maybe fewer relations. So what happens is that the C will be the representation of SLN. Depends on the number of strands you have. SLN depends on the number of strands of the order of the links, whatever. So then you pick this category and you do the same thing, basically you map each generators. So those are link invariants, right? So you can also define it, you have this, like we'll talk about more next time, this caps and cups. Caps and cups, and basically those are the two different directions. And you do the same thing, you decompose your original length into pieces like that, involving only the generators, six generators, I'd say, and apply this. And that should be your f if f is the tensor functor, so that you define this to be this, right? And then, and of course, as usual, you map this to the grading appropriately. So if you pick a B, then you look for grading. So now when you talk about color Jones polynomial, maybe then you don't just pick one object, maybe for each strand you pick an object. Okay. Now let's do the next thing. Now let's talk about duality. So this is our second goal today, is to say how graded algebra gives rise to graded category. And it depends on how you define graded algebra. But if, in particular, if S is invertible, like the antiphor is invertible, then you also get right duality. I'll explain each of these notions and see how they differ. Graded half algebra is just a graded algebra with an n-head. So a priori, there's not much relation between the R and the S. So R is a universal R matrix, which gives the name graded, and the half algebra is just the n-head S. So both of them not, there's in the definition, there's no direct relation. Though they will be in, there will be some induced relation through the, you know, the coproduct and all that stuff. You understand? So just one biological will both break the structure and help the biological structure. And now maybe let's focus a bit more on braided caterpillar duality. So following tradition of, you know, we go over this line, like simplifying stuff, let's talk about braided tensor caterpillar. Straight tensor caterpillar. I guess it's hard to determine whether you should trust my writing or my words. Sometimes I mess up my writing, sometimes I mess up what I'm saying. So what are the dates that it comes with? I always like to, you know, you only just specify these things kind of when you say what this is. And so you just keep in mind on what you need to specify. And let me explain. So usually after these, you have your L and R and your left constraint, right constraint associated. But since they're strict, so they're all identical, we need to write them. We dismiss as strict and then write this. And these are the neutral near pieces of data. And you kind of think of this as the birth, this is the death. So you will see this will correspond to this, and this will correspond to that. Okay, let me explain. So I was saying, I'm just repeating myself, this is a strict tensor caterpillar. Now, what does B and D mean for each? This is, I'm talking about left duality. For each V object in B and C, there exists a dual object also inside object C, just the labeling, right? There's just this an object inside object C which behaves like the following. Which has morphism on it which composes this follows. B goes from I to B tensor. And dv goes from v star tensor v equal tensor v to I, such that, maybe morphism such that these two are true. I mean, I dv tensor d. So right now you might look, you know, like a bunch of equations, but it will make more sense. They're easy to remember in a second. I want to show you the equation. Okay, so a couple equations relating to B and the D. Now let me draw what they mean. In C, and I forgot if I really like formally introduced graphic representation yet, but in that representation, a B, an object is maybe just a point, but identity of B is represented by this. This is so defined as like ID of B, okay? This is what it is. And this thing, identity on B star, is represented by going upward, but still label calling it B. Well, calling it B at the same time going upward means it dual. If you call it B dual, then it means B dual dual. I mean identity of B dual dual. Okay. So this one identity of B star. And now this and that, let's put a symbol to it. So we've always thought that composition is this thing composed with this thing. Well, our, and also the bottom is our source, right? Like the bottom, you know, we have to think about morphism as things in between here, and the bottom tells us what the initial object is, this tells us what the final object is. So here, the identity object is kind of represented by nothing, like nothing. And then somehow at the end, we end up with two things. And furthermore, the orientation is given by, so maybe imagine you start from nothing here, and you end up with two things. And then this is V tensor V star, you want the V is going down, like just like in the topological categories, going down is the thing that corresponds to the label. And this side, you want it going up because it's V star. So you are ready to compose, I don't know, whatever you want. You're ready to compose with your, like, ready to compose with your ID V star or something you like, right? So it just consistently doing that. So this going up. So basically, you have a this cup with going to your right, like this in this direction. And similarly for this one, let me just go through it again because maybe it's hard to see this. So at the bottom, the initial object is two things. But now the first one goes up and the second one goes down, right? Because the first one's a dual object. So, and the top is nothing, so it has to end back where it is. So that's how you got this morphism. So now we have these two extra, well, two special pieces of morphisms picked out. By the way, these morphisms are inside the category in Hong Kong. So you pick out two special morphisms which you can represent like this. So simple means this particular morphism, not just any morphism that satisfies this. So once we denote it like this, what do these relations mean? So it just means that, let's try to write it, build it up slowly. So composition means this thing goes to the bottom and this thing goes to the top. Or you can now, because composition and both the stacking are kind of reverse, right? I mean, if we want to read from top to down, then we need to read this thing from left to right, and if we read from bottom, if you read right to left, then we go bottom to up. So we can just maybe just read left to right and top to up. So identity of V, tensor with D of V, D of V is like this. And now a tensor PV with A identity. So PV is like this. And PV is like this. And this sets that is the same as identity. Okay, everything is labeled by B. So basically, you have this curly strand becomes your B. And in graphical calculus, we use equal with the dot on top. So the kind of to distinguish between in the topological category where we use the tilde, like to mean isotropic. So this means this is not in exactly the tangle category or whatever, but it's in the category that some generalization. Well, this is the category without, so we use this symbol. And similarly, this one is just this one equals that. So by the time once you ask your piece, you can just remember these relations and reproduce your equations. I'll just use those two. And there is a similar notion for right duality. Let me just point out the difference. Instead of having these things, we have like each V. Now we label the objects somewhat differently. There's an object V with a star label on the left, just means it's red dual. So it won't satisfy those relations. Okay. and morphisms. We call them BB prime. So remember notation for this, and I refer to the notation. So BB prime goes between identity and slightly different here. So just flip and also the dual word there. And the depth goes between, and so these third tensors B, you get B tensors start regular. And somehow, when it's right to you, it will start on the left. And when it's left to you, and then when the right, when it's the right to you, also go from left to right. So and it feels like that one is more natural. Well, okay. Such that, let's just, now I'll just use a graphical representation. And so the similar is just going from right to left instead of left to left. So you have a similar, well, so like whatever it is, you. Both pictures added from top to bottom, bottom to top, you always go from left to right, and here they will always be from right to left. And, so for any particular object, it makes sense. So let me explain and time. Okay, so the relations between the two. In general, you can have tensor category, a strict tensor category, with one of the duals but not both. And when they are both there, you call it autonomous. Just a name. You have both, but in general, you can define, like you can define them separately. And then, first observation is that, so you look get that equation, those morphisms and these morphisms. It seems like if you replace, so call this something W, and this, your W star, for example, I mean, if you have those, it will be very much like that once you make this change a variable, So what I'm interpreting this as, maybe this V left star, you can think of it as like the pre-dual, like if you've heard that notion. So the dual is, like you take the dual, but the pre-dual is something whose dual is the thing, right? So if you have a unique pre-dual, then you pick this out and stick it in here, then it will work. So it's some kind of concept that builds two layers, like kind of, you have a left and right, so on the different sides, you're extending from taking the dual or taking the free dual. Okay. Maybe it's not very intelligent, so the same goes here. If you replace this V, W star, and this is W again. Okay. But if they're autonomous, it also satisfies this. If this category is autonomous, i.e. with both duals, and this is true. I mean, it might not be whole like that. I mean, it's something just reminds you of what you learned perhaps in mini algebra. So in finite dimensional vector space, this is for finite dimensional vector space, the left and the right dual are the same thing. So because like you can, the dual and the dual again is the same vector space, right? So this equation comes from that. Except in general, the left dual and the right dual are the
Is this an equivalence? Is this a definition of autonomous?
No. Autonomous means that speed has both left and right duality. Basically.
And if it has both left and right duality,
then
it implies that there's
right. Yeah, then it says.
Can you give me an example of a C that is not autonomous?
As
an example? Because I don't see
how you could have one but not the other. So if you know, there are a couple of, now I'm going to give you probably one soon, but not to prove that it isn't. But if you know some measure theory, like, so I guess, so you know this L1 and L infinity, right? So they're not quite dual of each other, right? So which way? So it's like I think L infinity is inside L1 dual or something. I mean, one of this is true. Let me not spend too much time verifying. But L1 is not the dual of anything. And, you know, things like this. So most LPs in between, LP spaces, they have this nice relation, LQ star, right? And they have, the dual takes them between themselves. So those are autonomous, that's it. You know, in some appropriate defined category. But these are not so well behaved. So some objects are not well behaved in this measure space. So maybe if you put all the LPs together and try to form a category, it's not. Because the nature will be true for any category, any objects, but then you can restrict yourself. Subcategories, maybe. Okay, fine. So when you go to infinite dimensional space, that's clear. So finite dimensional, not only are they autonomous, the left dual is the same as the right dual in terms of vector space. But you can fail in two layers. One is the left might not be the same as right, but sometimes they're just not. They're just, one of them just don't exist. So next, so now I'm going to try to say, use the structure to build, to actually construct things with the left.
Sorry, I need to take off now.
Okay. So I guess I was defining a defined group. So I was going to comment. So what I'm trying to do is braided category with left duality. So these are just tensor category with left duality. Braided one is just with braiding hanging. There's no particularizations that the braiding and this needs to satisfy in the definition. So you can introduce duality and braiding set. Just like we can introduce the antipole and the universal R matrix set. So last lecture, we show how this R matrix, universal R matrix, gives rise to this the braiding in the category. So now, because they are kind of independent definitions a priori, we can just now show how S gives rise to the duality without worrying about the braiding for the moment. They will be compatible in the end. Well, I mean, there's no compatibility condition, that's what I mean. So if you define both things, and they will both satisfy the definition. Now, so construction. Make a bunch of definition, which is just like last time. let me finish. Yeah. Okay. So remember, before the parallel situation is this one. You give universal R matrix, you define this thing CUVR, right? Which is basically first let R act on the tensor product of vector spaces composed with tau, switching with UV. Okay, so this time we'll do a similar construction, which makes use S to construct both the V right star with the V and V, and then the V left star. But the construction will be a little longer this time. And then the proofs are really fun to yourself, because it's probably not very fun. I'll say why you want to motivate this definition. So let A be a Hopf algebra. I'll tell you what you need to prove. Let A be a Hopf algebra with antipole S. I have not required, I'm not assuming S to be a vertical right now, just ahead. Now for V inside, I want to turn A mod the finite dimensional modules with this F, this is new. Last time we didn't need it. A mod with the subscript F.
So F means finite dimensional?
Yeah. We just restrict to the subcategory finite dimensional modules. And so, see, if I want to show that this is has duality, I want to construct this object associated, an A module associated with it, and some A module, the A module morphisms, a couple of A module morphisms. Now I'm doing a construction. So with basis, I just pick a basis. So I'm using the construction right now depends on basis. I think in the end, it will be canonical, that construction, because the way it, the dual basis and the basis can be different. So now consider the dual, this dual vector space, home of VK, from VK. So it's a vector space home, right? With dual basis. So I want a natural candidate for B and D will be this. I mean, you just want to do such thing anyway. But it's not completely ready yet. I mean, but let me tentatively define these things. This means this bracket means evaluation. It just means VI, the dual vector evaluation. So it's very clear that it will satisfy that thing. I mean, it will be pretty clear that it satisfies. Because just because the definition of dual basis, you want to contract, if you check it. Like you say, you first say put a B here, and then you put stick a BJ next. Well, wait, and then oh, and still BJ next to it. And now you try to apply D to these two things, BJ, and then this gives you delta IJ, and you know delta IJ is someone. So and it will be clear just because it's dual basis, they're dual basis. And you see that this definition, I think, is not well. So this is just a dual. So this is just a well-defined like evaluation map. So that's definitely definitely canonical. I mean, not independent of the choice basis. And here, because you have them next to each other somehow, you know, the linear scalar. So now, what do I need to show? So since they satisfy this, but I want them to be morphism in my category. So I want them to be A module morphisms. And for them to be A module morphisms, we need to define so A module structure. This is from where I or K will drive it. Doesn't matter. I mean, things to K to so home. This is so just B and so home of K. Home B K. I want to put, so I know the A module structure on this one, I know the A module structure on this one. I want to define the A module structure on this one, such that you, when you use the tensor module structure on this one, this will be this will get A module map. So the definition turns out to be, you can define it using the antipole. So define an A action on this. So take an F inside home of E, K. Then we evaluate it on B, it's defined as F S A so it's kind of some sort of pullback from pullback of control, one of those of the model structure on A to the individual.
What is the action of the antipole again on an element of the algebra?
So it's an endomorphism, it's a linear isomorphizing, it's an endomorphism, and
it's an endomorphism, right?
Yes, endomorphism. So it will be take it back to B. But then it needs to be the inverse of identity with respect to this algebra structure on endomorphisms. So where the identity is the epsilon composed with, I mean, eta composed with epsilon. So it defines some sort of inverse of the identity.
Could you write that down on the wall?
So was so have a convolution with identity a now. So the same as h of composite that is the same as id a convolved s. So with respect to this means this identity with respect to this structure. So so convolution. So on endomorphism of A, you can this can be proved to be a multiplication, and the identity is this one. So it needs to be checked. This one, do you want the identity?
No.
Do you want to remind or
if it's
that?
Fast.
It's fast. But let me recall it. Okay. So let me just write out A. In convolution B, apply to, so it's supposed to be an element inside A, so let's take an element inside A. So it then it's mu, so you first apply the coproduct to A, and then you apply A tensor B, that's linear map to coproduct, and then multiply them together. So it was a natural thing, I mean, it's kind of the thing, the only thing you can do with all the stuff you have in hand.
It's interesting, even.
Yeah, the simplest thing at least. So, well, it's, yeah, anyway, we have to cook up other things. It just most natural. So, here, this thing, you can use the structure on this thing to define the structure of this thing via this. So, you remember, maybe I did not mention, this S is kind of anti-algebra morphism. So home of V has a natural right module structure, right A module structure, by first letting the A element act on V, so it's kind of like the A acts on the function from the right. But how do you turn, but you never want a left module structure on F, right, on home of V, home VK. So how do you do that? You use this algebra anti-morphism, which takes like swift. Switches a little and takes a right action to a left action. So we can say a whole lot of time, but this is the only place where this is. Should we go on, just finish up with the other half of the definition? So if you have left duality, then you can also have the S also invertible, you have additional. So this is a pretty natural structure. And the other one, just maybe a different. Because S is not always invertible. This one exists as possible. And the next one relies on S inverse. Oh, by the way, this action you can define not just on A mod F, but A mod. You don't have to define a dimension. What requires finite dimensionality, of course, is this choice of dual basis, this basis, dual basis. So, furthermore, if S is invertible, I'll just write down the parallel. Right? So, what you want these maps. By the way, the. So, we start. This thing, so usually you refer to this, you mean just this, right? Usually often in linear algebra. Since we're not doing linear algebra, this will be, let's say this is an object, I want an object inside C. What's it? Okay, call C A1. Yeah. Now, since it's an A1F, so as a vector space, it's the same as that. But as an A module, it has this structure. This is to finish up. I need to specify a module before I can say it. Now we know what we need. We want something from K to these three dual to V. And we don't know what, well, okay. I'm claiming again the underlying vector space structure is going to be the home from V to K again, linear algebra dual. There's just a parallel definition is that you will have this will work. Granted, you define appropriately the action on that. And you will also want this other map. Okay, and this one, it's the same thing, kind of, but with the appropriate units. Okay. So now you want VJ to go on the left, right? Otherwise, you cannot evaluate. And in this case, it's still down for IJ. Now to make them into amorphisms, what you need to do is to give let this object be star is like form of BK into from B to K with this structure, with the amorphous structure A acting on F. F is inside form BK. This is defined as using the inverse integral. So I was saying S is an algebra, an homomorphism, meaning it maps algebra to the opposite algebra, the same thing. I mean, the product maps the product to the S and to the product switch. Okay, I'm not saying it very clearly. But so they have there's some natural similar like nature, but this will be the other one that they find naturally from S. And these satisfy the left right dual conditions. The axioms are right duals. It's just for the same reason. I mean, as my vector space, I don't care which side of the vector so much. That's only dual problem. And this defining the A module structure, so in this way. Just to make sure that they're homomorphism. Okay, is that okay? It's a longer, much longer construction than writing down C, U, V for the grading from R. But that's what it is.
So, in this last thing, I mean, AF is naturally defined already because F in this case is already an A module. No? So what
no,
do you
mean? I throw away, I don't use the A-module structure there. I use the new, I give a new A-module structure. Because like this this thing is a different thing, right? I mean, simple a priori doesn't have to be the same in this category. It's a different object than the register. The star on the left and right can be different thing in the category. Mm-hmm. And if somehow this called algebra happens to be involutive, which means like if S square is itself, like S is its own inverse, then they happen to agree. But a priori did not. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have a question.
Okay, sure.
Because I didn't read so carefully the program. But is there a C2 cool the form of algebra in the end?
Cool.
Representation.
SU2.
Cool the form.
What's cool?
Cool quantum.
Quantum, yes.
SU will be very useful to have
very useful for you.
Yes. No, I mean
also an example.
Yes.
Oh yeah, so sure. Did I SL2, right? Or
yes.
Did I do that?
Yeah.
But what do you want different?
The quantum, right? Because
yes,
you don't get physics, so
right,
there are lots
there
of questions. And so in the end, we need the presentation.
Yeah, so I've been told that, like, I think there's something that I don't quite understand. So in general, there's a correspondence between this semi-simple algebras and the compact, like compact groups and the semi-simple. And like SU2 is your compact one, and SL2 is the semi-simple one. There should be some correspondence. I don't completely understand it.
Oh,
but
one is just the one is just taking over the real one. K, one is the only difference is that one you choose K as the field, as the other one you choose.
When you choose
R and when you choose C.
So U is the C one.
SU2 is you choose R, and SL2 is the same thing. Has the same generators, except you choose C as the field.
Yeah, if you understand that, it's probably easily translatable, no? But let me think about it a bit. There's no better why people say that also. I mean, I didn't think a whole lot about it. But the book, because that's the math, like they just talk about semi-simple stuff, somehow it's communicating these things. But SU2, as you say, maybe probably just comes from here. But once I understand the translation, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I should understand it.